Support for Science Friday comes from QuickBooks. If you work for yourself, try the new QuickBooks Self-Employed. It helps separate your personal and business expenses so you can quickly track what you spend for work and what you spend for yourself. Try QuickBooks Self-Employed and save up to 50% at tryselfemployed.com/Friday. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We've all heard the urban legends of alligators in the sewer system, boa constrictors swimming through pipes and into toilets. One thing, though, is not a legend. A certain slippery house pet has been invading ponds in Canada. That's one of the selected short subjects in science this week. Here with the rest of the stories and more is Rachel Feltman of the Speaking of Science blog at the Washington Post. Good to have you back, Rachel.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Tell us about this fish.
So household goldfish are showing up in lakes in Canada, and Canadian officials have officially asked people to please stop dumping or flushing their goldfish because they're showing up in alarming numbers and growing to really alarming sizes. They've been caught as big as dinner plates, and that's because a lot of people don't realize that domestic goldfish are a kind of carp, and carp will kind of grow as much as they're allowed to. You know, if they have a lot of food and the water quality is good, they'll pretty much grow for their entire lives. So these goldfish, they end up in ponds, even cold Canadian ponds, apparently, and it's summer, there's plenty of food, and they just keep growing.
So they survive the winter.
Well,
you know,
enough of them are showing up that it seems like they're surviving.
I used to have little goldfish in my little backyard pond that they would even survive under the ice as long as they had some water.
Carp will do that. So they're asking people to please stop dumping their goldfish because they're growing big enough that they're out competing local fish for resources.
Can you fish them?
Are they good eating? I'm not sure.
I don't know. We'll let our Canadian friends deal with that.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about this mysterious white dots on Ceres that the NASA Dawn mission has spotted.
Yeah, sure. So the Dawn spacecraft has actually been orbiting Ceres since March, but it still hasn't gotten as close as it's going to get. Right now, it's at a mapping orbit of like 2,700 miles above the surface, and it's getting closer and closer to showing us what these mysterious white dots were. It started out as looking like just this white dot in the middle of the dwarf planet, and the closer the spacecraft got, the more spots there actually were. Now we know that in the middle of this crater, about 55 miles wide, there's one large spot that's probably about 6 miles wide, and then at least 8 smaller ones. Scientists think they're probably ice or salt because they're clearly highly reflective. But until we get closer, they're not going to come out and say what they are.
Yeah.
So the next mapping orbit, which is in July, is 900 miles above the surface. So probably we'll get a better idea then. And totally coincidentally, that's also when we're going to be seeing Pluto for the first time with the New Horizons spacecraft. That flyby is on July 14th. So probably around the second week of July, we'll be seeing some really crazy stuff from these dwarf planets that we've never seen before.
Wow, a celestial extravaganza coming up. Let's talk about your next story. You talked about the goldfish in Canada, but there's an invasive species in Florida.
Yes,
right?
There's also an invasive species in Florida. It's considered one of the worst invasive species. It's the New Guinea flatworm, and they're really prolific wherever they show up. And they come in soil and on plants, and they eat native snails and worms. And they can climb trees to go after snails. They're really good at hunting snails, and they're really ugly. They're a couple inches long and slimy and kind of look like sneezes with eyeballs.
Wait a minute. a sneeze with eyeballs.
Yeah, well, that's
what
I think.
That is pretty ugly.
Like. And the problem is that they eat all these snails, but they taste so bad that nothing eats them. Researchers haven't even been able to get chickens to eat them. So they're eating this very important part of the food chain, these little snails and worms, but they're not replacing them on the food chain.
So they live on people's lawns, or where do they find them?
They usually show up in France they showed up in hothouses. They tend to be in places where like plants have been imported. And what's troubling is that they're usually only seen on islands, and it takes them a really long time to get carried from one island to another. But a few months ago, last year actually, they showed up in France, and now they've shown up on the continental U.S. So the concern is that we don't know how good they are at spreading when they're on, you know, a large landmass, and it's possible that they could spread pretty quickly in the U.S.
Florida always has something, right? There's always some invasive species, whether it's some new kind of cockroach that was flying. Remember that years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know whatever happened to that. Maybe we'll find out. To this species. Let's go to your last quirky story, some jellyfish lamb meat?
Yeah.
Jellyfish lamb meat.
So a group in France that was working on genetically engineered sheep, to study heart disease and treatment for heart disease. They had given a bunch of sheep this green fluorescent protein from jellyfish, which is used really commonly in genetically modified organisms. Except one of the lambs that had this gene was sent off to a slaughterhouse as food-grade meat. And that's pretty disturbing. It was eaten sometime last year, probably. Even though there's no indication that it was dangerous that the lamb was eaten. But obviously people are a little freaked out. But
Do we know who ate it? Oh, good. Give me the twist. We don't know who ate it.
But the twist is that the lab that it came from is now saying that they have suspended someone they think is responsible and that they believe it was done intentionally and maliciously as part of some kind of interlab feud.
Stupid scientist tricks.
Yeah. It's a great prank.
Wow. So this is the kind of thing that scientists put inside animals to watch it fluoresce so they can see when it's working, right?
Right.
And so they put it in, they had it in the jellyfish normally to see it when it fluoresces, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And they fed it to a lamb.
Well, they genetically modified
the
lamb. Right, right. And
somebody
fed it to a human.
and they have not identified the human.
No.
But we could watch for him glowing on his...
Probably not anything anyone in France needs to worry about, but clearly the people who work at this lab should be a little worried.
Yeah, I mean, this is a bad... This is not a nice trick.
No,
I mean,
it's not.
We're making fun of it, but this is not a nice thing to do.
No.
This is not how science should be done. All right. Well, Rachel, thank you very much, as always.
Thank you.
Rachel Feltman is author of the Speaking of Science blog at the Washington Post. Next up, time to play Good Thing, Bad Thing. Because every story has a flip side. And today's story, self-driving vehicles. They're already around. You can see them. They've gone cross-country driving tests. And just this year, an autonomous truck got its license to cruise down Nevada's highways. The self-driving big rig even took a test run over the Hoover Dam, not exactly a low-stakes driving test. Are we ready for robots to take the steering wheel? Evan Ackerman is a robot enthusiast and contributing editor for the IEEE Spectrum in Washington. Welcome, Evan.
Hi, Ira. Great to be here.
Let's talk good thing, bad thing. What's good about this?
There's lots of good things, but let me focus on just the top three, I'd say. The first and most important is, of course, safety. And most humans are not very good drivers because we depend on driving just being normal most of the time. It's not that we get tired or distracted. It's that most of us don't have the necessary skills or experience or reflexes to get ourselves out of driving situations that can instantly turn dangerous. And autonomous cars have sensors and computers that can make complex decisions way faster than we can. And we can teach these cars to drive like a professional rally car driver. So it's not just that a robot car can stop faster than a human driver can, but these cars will be able to aggressively maneuver out of a potentially dangerous situation in a way that most people would have no idea how to do. And since this is mostly done in software, whenever anyone teaches one car to be a better driver, all these autonomous cars can become better drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And the next big thing is efficiency. The average car spends 90 to 95% of its life just sitting somewhere, not being used. And so if most people only need a car 10% of the time, we could all save a huge amount of money by letting autonomous shared cars shuttle us all around whenever we needed them to. And if we did that, we could repurpose a lot of the space that we devote to parked cars in cities, too. Autonomous vehicles are also way more efficient on highways. Like on a typical highway during rush hour, you're looking at somewhere between 70 and 80% totally empty, unused road space. And so by driving much closer together, autonomous cars could significantly reduce traffic without us having to spend any money on more roads. And then the last good thing that I want to mention is that autonomous cars are just going to make your life better. Like for most people, most of the time, in the very